arts. Even in the town hall.
Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield. Made by you.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz. From hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7pm here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Afternoon. You are listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live with me, Martin.
And me, Denise. Good afternoon.
Yes, well, here we are on The Film Show, all jolly good. I hope we're going to kick these film festivals into the long grass. I'm sick of talking about
it's nearly time. We can soon start talking about who's going to win the Oscars, Martin.
Yes.
Don't worry.
We'll talk about the same films for the next for the next 6 months, which I'm about to do now, because at the Toronto Film Festival, the audience award was won by a film called The Life of Chuck.
Yeah.
And it said that any film that wins the audience award at TIFF, as we call it, is then a major contender for the best Oscar, the best film Oscar in March.
Mm.
So this is an adaptation of a Stephen King story, with three separate stories within it, and Tom Hiddleston is the main actor in one of them. I'm not a big Hiddleston fan.
No,
a bit of
no,
a
and
boy,
I, there's yeah. And the narrative of it is that Chiwetel Ejiofor, who I adore, he's a beautiful actor, but he can't get away from Tom Hiddleston. Just pops up everywhere for no apparent reason, and that sounds like a big nightmare for me.
Good old East End boys, Chiwetel. Yeah.
I saw his Othello.
Did you?
Yeah. And Ewan McGregor was his Iago. It was great.
No, he is. Mm. He's an amazing... In fact, he should be the next James Bond, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he's very good.
Yeah. So that's our first mention of the 2025 Oscars, and I think we need an embargo on it from now on. For at least a month, please.
A month. We'll give it a month. Yeah, we'll get Halloween on the way.
Oh, can we? You're so kind. The other film that we're going to talk a little bit about now, and we mentioned it last week, but there's now a trailer available for you to look.
Oh, it's a gorgeous trailer as well.
And that's Sir Steve McQueen's Blitz.
And do you know some of that was filmed in Hull? You do now.
Well, actually, they've used Hull quite a lot for films and TV set in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
Because around the old dock area, there's like lots of warehouses. There's still like streets of terraced houses. And, of course, in London, all that sort of thing has been gentrified now and is full of hipster doofi.
There you go. The bonus for being a bit behind then.
You can make more money out of pretending to be bombed. There you are.
But it looks like a really intriguing narrative as well. So I'm a sucker for a World War II film any day of the week. But this one is specifically sort of centred around one of the biggest disasters in the Second World War, civilian disasters.
I think it was the most costly in terms of human lives, which was the Bethnal Green tube disaster.
And not a bomb dropped.
No. Mm. In 1943, the sirens had gone off. People were making their way into the tube, Bethnal Green tube station, and there was a crush, and 173 people died in the ensuing melee. Now, there's always been a lot of stories as to what exactly happened. Some people say there was a panic, or what might have caused this panic has been put down by some to say a woman carrying a child slipped. There's also one story which I think was used by Thames Television, who made a TV drama about the disaster back in the 1970s, and that was written by a guy called Bernard Copps, who's a very well-known writer about the East End of London, and he was actually at Bethnal Green that night as a young teenager. And one of the stories, which doesn't put quite as much of the British bulldog spirit into quite as nice a light, is that there was the panic was caused by pickpockets, because whenever the sirens went out, you know, big crowds of people tightly packed together were a very easy hunting ground for pickpockets and petty thieves, and that may have caused the surge. But that's going to be one of the plot elements, isn't it, within McQueen's film?
Well, yeah, so the central character is a young boy, isn't it, who's been sent away for safety by his mum, played by Saoirse Ronan.
Evacuated, isn't
and
it? Yeah.
He comes back to blitz-torn London, and I assume as part of this melee.
Yeah, how they're going to work it in, I'm not sure, but it's going to be interesting, and it's a part of the Second World War, which hasn't had quite as much coverage as what you might think it has.
Mm.
There is something of a mythos, though, isn't there, built around, as you say, that bulldog spirit and the Blitz, you know,
yeah, there was
we can take it. Come
important
on,
propaganda.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can understand why you wouldn't want, I mean, it's just a, you wouldn't want to report on that many civilians dying, not in a bombing situation.
Yeah.
You don't want that getting in your enemy's hands. But then the subsequent cover-up for decades after, that means that survivors of it have had to spend their whole lives campaigning
for some sort of recognition,
and you just go, yeah, well, this rings a bell.
Oh,
it, right up to Hillsborough, Grenfell, you know.
Hillsborough, post office scandal. As soon as officialdom gets their hands on it, everything's all right, nothing's gone wrong, you people are just causing us trouble. And it's quite a sad reflection in many ways of how this country works. The other strange thing about Blitz is that Paul Weller, yes, he of The Jam, he's playing a grandfather in it.
Saoirse Ronan's father, yeah.
You get a glimpse of him in the trailer, and thank or praise be to God, he's got rid of his silly pixie mullet that he's been wearing for the past few years.
Maybe looking, it's underneath a wig.
Looking increasingly ridiculous. But, of course, it does also raise the question, is there going to be a scene in a pub where Paul Weller will be sat at a piano bashing out down in the tube station at midnight? I don't know. I'm just asking the question.
I'm going to say possibly not, but it's a very nice idea.
It's a nice idea,
maybe in the
it?
Cut.
In the director's cut.
Cut scenes, yeah.
In scenes we would never have put into the film.
I'm interested to see what he's like in this. It's quite interesting casting.
Because he has that horrible leathery tan, doesn't he, all the time now? I don't know. It's been a long time since I've listened to a Paul Weller album, or even a Jam album, I have to say now. And I used to be mad about them when they were actually out, you know.
Well, The Blitz is opening. It's the opening gala film for the London Film Festival,
yes.
It's also showing in select cinemas in the UK in advance of its release as part of the London Film Festival on tour, including here at the Showroom, I think.
Yes.
On the same night.
So you might want to have a look out to see where any of these, not just Blitz, but any of the films that are going to be on at the London Film Festival may be screening, because I think it's not just art house cinemas that are going to benefit from this.
But if I remember rightly, there will be security men making sure that we don't film anything.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Yeah. Well, they did that at Celluloid Screams once. They were showing,
put that phone away. Yeah. I'm literally looking at... What? It's not even started yet.
So you'll film that on your phone and you're going to take that home and watch it when you could have sat in the cinema and watched it on a big screen. Are you crazy?
There was another exciting trailer this week.
Oh, yes.
Mickey 17. It's been a long time since Parasite and director Bong Joon-ho.
It's about 5 years, isn't it?
Yeah, it was 2019, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose we have had a pandemic since then.
We did have a pandemic.
And it looks like he shot this new film in space.
Yes.
So he's been busy. It's gone.
As you do.
But this is Robin Pattinson, and this time in space, but without the soundtrack of the Tinderstick. Are you okay with that, Martin?
The thing that made High Life was that Robert Pattinson actually sang along to the Tinderstick.
And we played it on the show, didn't we, quite recently?
Yeah. And we might play again in a few weeks, because we're going to see the Tindersticks in a
few weeks. We are, yeah.
So we may have a Tindersticks week that particular week.
But Mickey 17 looks... I'm really excited from the trailer. Have a look at the trailer. It's fab. Mm. It's also got Stephen Yeun in it, who I really, really like. And Naomi Aki, who has been great in so many things this year already. And Mark Ruffalo turns up as well. Toni Collette.
Oh, she's in everything, Toni Collette. She's another one of these actors who don't sleep. The gist of it seems to be he just keeps dying, doesn't he?
Yeah, so he signs up to get off Dull Earth and as an expendable. Looks like from a trailer he doesn't know what the word expendable means and he doesn't read the contract, which just basically means you get to die. You do the risky things in space, you get to die and come back as a clone of yourself each time.
There was a Tom Cruise film a bit like that, wasn't there? Live, Die, Repeat, which also had another title. Do you remember where he was fighting in a war in space and he kept dying and then he had to come back and he had to try and learn from the mistake as to how he died
This gets a bit complicated when Mickey 17 meets Mickey, whatever
16,
number, yeah, yeah.
Oh dear.
But this, this looks fabulous.
Yes.
Bong Joon-ho, complications in shoe, I think.
Right, is it time for some music?
Your picks this week.
Yes, and amazingly, I took a leaf out of your book and took some music from some films. It's a complete game changer.
It has been a
game changer, yeah. I'd say. So for no real reason, just purely on a whim, I decided to go through my vaults and dig out some stuff by the composer Michael Nyman. Any comment there? You all right with that?
Yeah, love it.
See, I think of you when I do my choices. I don't
Your first choice, though, I hadn't actually seen this film before, and I watched it for the first time this week.
Well, we've got four pieces from a number of films that Nyman has contributed the music for. And the first is from, and I think one of his first film scores to get a lot of publicity and airtime. It was for Peter Greenaway's The Draftsman's Contract, way back in 1982, I think.
A young pup then.
You were, weren't you? Mm. It's all gone by so fast, isn't it? I had a few years on you then. But
I tell you what, I wasn't watching this kind of stuff in 1982.
No, I bet you weren't. No. But you see, then I was twice as old as you. Now I'm just a fraction older.
Yeah, all right, don't rub it in.
Just thought I'd put that out there. Okay, so this is from The Draftsman's Contract. And this is, because I haven't got me right glasses on here. Chasing sheep is best left to shepherds. Discuss.
Thank you.
listening to the film show. That was Michael Nyman's soundtrack from The Draftsman's Contract from 1982. Now, my first experience of Peter Greenaway in the cinema, also featuring Michael Nyman's soundtrack, was The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover. I was old enough to face Peter Greenaway by then.
And that's a pretty brutal introduction to Peter Greenaway. It's
stunning film. Helen Mirren, Michael Gambon. He's a gangster. She's his girlfriend.
Roth is in there somewhere as well, isn't
it? It's just such a weird world as well. It looks like it's all in a big industrial hangar.
Yeah.
And this is this gangster who's obsessed with going to the restaurant, takes over the place. Oh, it's...
Helen Mirren barely wears any clothes in it for most of the film, doesn't she? I mean...
Just what an exciting film that was.
It is. Yeah. And there are some ghastly moments in it, aren't there? Mm. Some really, really hard...
Grim. But The Draftsman's Contract was a difficult... It looks quite genteel at the beginning, and then you gradually realise you're watching something quite unsettling.
I was looking at... A Zed and Two Noughts. That was
that's
a weird one.
That's the twins who get obsessed with a woman with an amputated leg from an accident that they lost their wives in.
As an accident with a swan. But the weirdest thing about that film is Jim Davidson is in it.
No.
Yes.
Oh God. Is it a brief?
He's in it. He's in it. Oh. But you've got to ask yourself, how did that audition? Can you imagine? What that audition was with Peter Greenaway and Jim Davidson.
How? Why? What?
Stranger things happen in life.
Goodness me. Talking of strange things happening in life.
Yes.
We're now going to talk about...
Threads. The BBC film, which was... broadcast on September 23rd, 1984.
A.K.A. The Night the Country Didn't Sleep. Known in TV circles as that
There were four channels, and you had a look...
I had a look at the listings. There wasn't much to compete with Nuclear Armageddon
This was light viewing almost, wasn't it? You know, you could drag yourself away from the darts. Directed by Mick Jackson, written by Barry Hines, and shot entirely in Sheffield. It is like a drama documentary about the effects of a nuclear attack on Sheffield.
I hadn't realised, and this is how they probably got away with it, that Mick Jackson had such a background in science for the BBC.
Yes, yeah. He'd done a lot of documentary stuff, hadn't he? Yeah. Because the film is quite curious, because half of it... A lot of it is like a kitchen sink drama about two families in Sheffield.
Almost the first half of it is the war is sort of mentioned.
It's on the radio.
News
isn't
is coming in the background of unsettlement.
And then you start getting these more sort of like informational snippets coming out. And then
paint your windows to.
But these people you've got to know in the first part of the film, you then follow what their experience of the bomb. Dropping on Sheffield.
In the lead up, there's like an unexpected pregnancy, isn't there, for the two young...
Yes, yeah. the young couple, the girl is pregnant, and of course that then leads into quite a horrible storyline of what happens after the bomb. But the film is famous, and I would say not just in Sheffield, for its depiction of the destruction of Sheffield. There's a mushroom cloud exploding over the town hall, and panic on the moor. Some unbelievable shots of people running around.
Wow, Woolworths.
Screaming. Woolworths.
Gone.
British Home Stores.
Gone.
Debenhams.
Gone.
Pretty much like real life.
And also, it was so, I mean, particularly for Sheffield, it must have been, you know... But these were recognisable streets for wherever you lived in the UK.
Because one family's middle class and they're sort of up at Encliffe Park anyway, that sort of way. And the others look, it's like as if it's somewhere like Hillsborough, you know, back to back housing. But the film has an incredible power to it, and this wasn't the first nuclear war program that the BBC had made.
Yes, still on my DVD to watch pile because I'm too scared to watch it.
You need to peel the cellophane off of it.
Oh, no, the cellophane's off because it's on a double bill with Culloden, but I can't get round to actually pressing play on the war game. 1966, I want to say.
It was made in 64.
Never got broadcast, though.
It never got broadcast. It was directed by Peter Watkins, probably the most terrible enfant of British documentary
cinema.
Did he
end up going to France?
He's done lots of work in France, and his work is absolutely fascinating. But he made this film for the BBC, and the BBC got very, very worried about it. This film shows what the effects of an attack on Canterbury would be. And the film is absolutely excoriating in showing you just how inadequate the civil defence measures were. And it was, you know, people putting a door up against the wall, get under that, you'll be all right. Nonsense like that. And again, like Threads, it showed what would happen in the coming months after such an attack. Martial law, people being shot on sight for stealing or looting, mass starvation, the psychological effects, especially on children, of what they had experienced. And the BBC kept it on ice for a while, and then apparently the story is that the Home Office said, you can't show this, you're going to have to pull it. So I think technically the BBC didn't ban it, but it wasn't shown on television until, I think it was 1986, and Channel 4 showed it.
So after Threads.
After Threads. But the other thing was, I think in 1966, it won an Academy Award, I think for Best Documentary. So it had international recognition.
But nobody here could see it.
Could see it. And the film is far more widely shown, as you know, you've got that DVD in your house, which you studiously ignore.
Well, I don't ignore it. It looks at me from the shelf and says, you're not ready yet, Denise. It's not for you yet.
Another bottle of wine, Denise.
But it is, to be fair, it is hard viewing.
Threads is, and I don't know, I think it is anyway, wherever you might live, but there is something quite shocking seeing places that you know, if not go up in smoke, sort of melt before your eyes.
Yeah, and there's quite often, like, viewings, screenings in Sheffield. I think there's been a couple already this year, but there was one, I remember, one year in the amphitheatre. So you could actually watch the film and see the moor to the left of the screen.
Yeah,
where
and the town hall you're looking at, aren't you? Which is, I mean, it's beautifully written.
It's very important as well, and it is, you know, and it was at the time appreciated. Remember Mick Jackson talking about Neil Kinnock writing to him, and he framed that letter and put it on the wall, and just saying how important it was to have these conversations.
And I think the other thing about it is, it's like young people of today, they don't really understand what it was like to live where there was this threat of nuclear war, which you grew up with.
They might be getting a bit of a taste of it now.
But, I mean, for us, it was just always...
It was always there. Yeah. And I was very young when this came out, but I do remember it. There wasn't much else on that night, and I watched television with my mum and dad.
You moaning because you wanted to watch the darts?
Yeah, why have they stopped showing the darts? What's this? No, I wasn't. But it had a real impact. You only just had four channels then. There really wasn't much else on. We watched a lot of TV drama. What are you giving us? Okay, we'll have a look.
Yeah.
And you could just try, you know.
But you would watch things that now you would probably just flick over to a...
No, or you wouldn't be watching...
something else.
You're
flicking
not watching
through the
together.
Channels, would you?
You don't flick through the channels. Yeah. You know what you're going to watch because you're streaming it, and you know. But there's this communal... I mean, nearly 7 million people watched Threads, and it was on BBC Two.
Yeah. That must have been one of the highest audiences.
I think it was, yeah.
Something shown on BBC Two.
And it got shown again the year after, I think, on BBC One, or a couple of years later.
It has been available... I think it was a VHS came out of it, and there was a DVD I don't know if it's still available, or, you know, you'd have to...
But I was just thinking about the effect that it had on me personally. Yeah. And it's there was a lot of literature for young kids then about that. Remember at school we had to read Zed for Zachariah. I think my English teacher hated me because after watching Threads, I wrote a story about nuclear Armageddon. She's like, oh, not more kids writing about nuclear Armageddon, oh my Lord. But it was a massive part of our lives.
Well, you're saying there, the way, especially around 1984, like you had Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Two Tribes, and I don't know if it was 1984, but you had Kate Bush and Breathing. That's all about nuclear war.
Yeah, but you also had all of the So there was, in 1984, they released a film, 1984, about this dystopian future.
Well, we all know what 1984, yeah.
But I was looking at, like, what was on the telly around about that time? In August, you had a lovely LA Olympics, everything's lovely. September, back to school time, by the way, kids.
That's
Have you forgotten about nuclear Armageddon and the Woolworths will blow up on your high street?
Going back to school thing, you've mentioned that a lot this morning.
Yeah, I didn't like going back to school.
It's like a...
We moved around a lot when I was a kid, so it was a really worse back to school for me because it was in a new place as
new
well.
Kids,
so I didn't know anyone. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I was going up in smoke soon anyway, so I wouldn't bother getting to know anyone.
But then by October, I think we had the famine in Africa being reported on the telly. It wasn't a great lead into Christmas.
No. Well, that's cheered everyone.
Yeah, Threads. But it is screening again. I think there's a sold out screening on at Brim Hall.
Yeah,
but you get to have a talk by the CND before it as well, telling you how relevant it is now.
But it is sold out, that one.
That is sold
it?
Out. But, yeah, but it's on. I think BBC4 reshowing it next month.
And I'm hoping they'll then have it on iPlayer.
They should do
because
I
looked at it. Well, it must be on iPlayer. Something as important as that, you know, you'd have it. No,
iPlayer is generally what's been on in the last few weeks or months, apart from their RKO films, which are there forever.
Yeah,
I think.
But you think they'd have like an archive thread, wouldn't you? You know,
it'd be nice.
See,
that's what BBC4
I should be
is
a television
now.
Program planner.
Now that BBC4 has stopped producing anything, there's a lot more stuff that crops up on there.
You've got two channels there. Don't have it coming on at 7. Just have it broadcasting stuff. All day, you know, do it in doing 2 12-hour stints and stuff.
Yeah, you could watch Threads for lunch.
Yeah, you could watch it; it's on a loop. But it is one of I think it's one of the most powerful pieces of television drama ever made. And people could say, don't over-egg it.
No,
but
it's not over-egging it. It had a massive impact.
Then you need to see this, whether you live in Sheffield or not. It's unfortunately a terrible universal story of what would happen anywhere should something as horrible as this ever happen. So that's our Sheffield bit as well for this week.
We've
gone local.
Let's go into space now.
Into space.
Let's get away from it as far as we can.
Our next piece of music from Michael Nyman is from the film, the science fiction, the wonderful science fiction film. I love this film.
I do too.
Gattaca.
Yeah.
With Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman.
I don't feel like it's remembered enough now or praised enough now.
I remember it because I was on the Eurostar with them, wasn't I?
Oh, yeah. Is this another one of
it's
your...
It's another one of my media stories. I was on the Eurostar, just across from it. Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman.
Who should be there?
Who should
Ethan
be there?
Hawke and Uma Thurman. I said Uma.
Uma.
No.
I said, my dad, look who's over there. Look who's over there. And he had no idea who they were. So, you're useless. So I tried to start a conversation. They just told me to go away and stop bothering them.
He is excellent in this film.
He is. Yeah. As is... There's another
Jude.
Young actor. Is it
Jude?
Lauren Dean is in it, and he was going to be big, and he wasn't. And he was in a couple of films around this time, and it was like he was a buzz about him. Oh yeah, I forgot about Jude Law.
Yeah,
I mean, how can you forget about Jude Law when he's in every other film that comes out?
He is
a
very
days?
Bitter man in this film. As
yes.
Well. And he does it very well.
Ernest Borgnine as well. Is it one of Ernest Borgnine's last films?
Oh, I don't know.
No, because I think he must have done SpongeBob SquarePants after that. Shelley didn't believe me when I said that Ernest Borgnine did SpongeBob SquarePants.
But it's
she
true.
She was wrong.
It's true, Shelley.
Anyway, this is from Gattaca, which I think is one of Nyman's lushest and most romantic scores. And this does sometimes. I do tear up sometimes.
Oh, do you?
I do.
So. Don't get it in the console there.
No.
All right, cheers.
This is The Other Side.
Michael Nyman.
I mean,
do you need a tissue? Oh. Oh, that's beautiful.
It was, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
That's almost wiped away the memory of Threads for me. That
not quite, yeah. not quite. What have you been to see at the cinema this week?
I'm afraid
anything
it's on
good?
A need-to-know basis.
We've seen a lot of 18-rated films this
it's
week,
been a
haven't
saucy
we?
Week, hasn't
saucy
it?
Saucy week and
yes.
quite gory.
Yes.
But I started with The Goldman Case. Now, this is a French film. It is directed by Cédric Kahn, not a director I'm familiar with.
That name rings a bell.
You have a look at that while I you have a look at it while I talk about the film.
I'll do that. I'll do the backup research work.
It's go on. That I can't be bothered to do.
I can't be
asked. It centres on the murder trial of a far left militant, a real case, Pierre Goldman. It's unbelievably gripping, inexplicably gripping for me. I'm not that big a fan. As we know, I've never watched 12 Angry Men because I don't want to be stuck in a courtroom all day.
You're not good on courtroom stuff.
No, but it's really good. It's helped, I think, by my ignorance of the case as well. I think if you're a French audience for this, you know who Pierre Goldman is. You know what happened next. But it's really, it builds up really well and... Not being familiar with French courts and the way they work, although been some really good examples of it this last few years, Saint-Omer and Anatomy of a Fall, of course, the to-ing and fro-ing of the courtroom and the way that the judges are set up. It's beautifully told, and he's a really interesting character in that you're not really sure who you're sympathetic with and why not. But he's like a hero in far left terms. Mm. But he is accused of murdering two people on at a robbery, an armed robbery, where he admits being involved in armed robberies, but not this one and not shooting these people. And his supporters are very much, he wouldn't do that. And he is a difficult character for the people even defending him in court. It's really well told. And not knowing what happens by the end of the film, when you get the reveal at the end, it's a bit of a shocker. Yeah. Mm. I recommend it, though. Really,
so,
really good.
What, you give it a...
I'm rating it. Rating it.
An emphatic rating.
Rating it, mate. But there's no gore in it, which we can't say the same for the next two films.
I looked at the other films he'd made, but titles were all in French.
It's all French, isn't it? C'est familiar, mais je ne sais pas.
Roberto Sacco was one he's done. I saw that many years ago, and that was pretty good. Another sort of true life crime film that was. Right, so I went to. I don't know how I'm going to review this. So
because you don't want to reveal too much.
Bear with me. I went to see Strange Darling, which I saw the trailer last week, and the trailer was telling me that, you know, you've never seen anything like this, gives you a complete different twist on the serial killer movie, yada, yada, yada. Well, I have to say that was quite an understatement. Mm. This is, it just blew me away. It's disorientating right from the word go. But I can't say too much because you don't read any reviews of this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep well
away. I've already had it spoiled for me, and I wish I hadn't.
But just a few interesting bits about it. It comes up and says that this film was shot entirely on 35mm.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And the director of the director of photography was Giovanni Ribisi, actor. He was in Friends. He was Phoebe's brother.
Oh. Oh, that guy. You get a Friends reference on there, even though I don't want to know it.
Apparently he's in Avatar, but I've never seen Avatar.
I once had a terrible boyfriend who saw me watching Friends and went, I just expected better of you.
Oh, dear. God.
He's gone. Exhibit A. Yeah.
he swiftly had to leave the room, didn't he? Did you give him that look?
Oh, God. I gave him his marching orders.
Anyway, and it looks fantastic. He's got a career in cinematography. Now, the film then says that this film is going to be... The film is going to tell you its story in 6 chapters, which it then proceeds to do, starting with chapter 3.
Right.
And that is how the rest of the film progresses. So I'll just tell you the opening of the film. You are in the middle of a hectic car chase.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know who these people are in each of the cars. You don't know what the reasoning for is, and that's it. You know, this film has grabbed you by the scruff of the neck and has just dragged you in.
Yeah.
And the way this sequencing works, this abstract sequencing of things not following order, works wonders because it's forever pulling the carpet from underneath your feet And what you think is something...
is something,
might not be,
right.
Or it might be, or it could be something completely different. And so this structure works absolutely beautifully. And if you go back and look at it, if you watched it chronologically, you would do a, yeah. So it's brilliantly structured. I've heard some lazy reviews. I've read some reviews since.
Mm.
You know, it's just like Pulp Fiction. No, it's not like Pulp Fiction. That was a load of messing
Quentin
around.
Tarantino is not the first person to do anything.
Yes. And this, remember, is one story.
Mm.
So it works beautifully. Whereas the Pulp Fiction stuff was a bit, well, as far as I'm concerned, quite arbitrary.
Yeah.
People wandering in from one... This is one story, which is told in this fragmentary way. And it keeps you guessing all the time. And like you're never sure where you are. And some of that leads you to being quite disturbed by some of the stuff you see on screen.
Mm.
And I think I might have to leave it at that. But,
yeah.
But this is very strong stuff. Hour and 37 minutes and one of the best films I've seen this year.
Amazing.
I'm going to leave it there. Okay. And I don't want to say any more, but don't read anything else. Don't watch anything else.
Yeah, I have to leave it a while before I can watch it because I need to forget the spoiler that I've heard for it.
Oh.
So when I come across it, I'm going to come across it in a year and I'll have forgotten. But I can't watch it yet.
I kept away from it though, didn't I? That spoiler just now.
You did, yeah. Thank you. Very well done. Very well done indeed. Now, do you want to see a film that is very subtle about the beauty industry? Because this is not it.
is it that Prada film with Anne Hathaway?
The Substance. I went to see The Substance, which is Coralie Fargeau, French director, won the Cannes Best Screenplay. Demi Moore plays a dreaded 50-year-old waning Hollywood star.
Have you reached that age yet?
Shut up. Shut your cake hole, Martin.
Oh, you gave me that look there.
Shut your cake
hole.
That's a look for the radio, that. Yeah. She is the dreaded age of 50. The film nicely opens up by setting her up with the creation of the overhead shot of a Hollywood star. So this is the beginning of her stardom, and that Hollywood star gradually begins to fade. And when we join her, when we meet her, in the flesh, as it were, she is now the host of a sort of keep fit type show, sort of a cross between, I don't know, Jane Fonda and Olivia Newton-John. But she overhears nasty TV executive Dennis Quaid in a part that was going to be played by Ray Liotta. But he sadly died just before filming started. And he doesn't want this old hag on the telly no more. He wants someone younger and fitter and more beautiful. Like I say, this film is not subtle. There is no subtlety in this film. Mm. But it's a lot of fun for it. It's beautifully shot. It has a lot of references to other filmmakers in there that it's fun to watch. And I don't need to say who is because it will be obvious when you watch it.
Yeah.
It is... You think, because it's an 18-rated film, and there is the part when Demi Moore starts to take this substance, another version of herself comes out in a kind of Cronenberg body horror vision
sloppy
coming out
way,
of her back. Margaret Qualley just comes out of there fully formed. And there's a rule that they have to adhere to. There must be only 7 days. They are one. These women must remember that they are one. So while Margaret Qualley's got her 7 days as a younger, better Demi Moore, or Elizabeth Sparkle is her name. Demi Moore has to come back in and have her 7 days. Obviously, whenever there's a rule like that, it's not long until that rule is not. And these women don't behave as one. There is this intergenerational resentment of this younger, fitter one wasting her time and the older one sitting around watching telly.
It sounds like a kitchen sink drama, this.
Oh, God, it's so fun.
Well,
it's
a lot messier.
And you get... It's so stylishly done. And then when you get to, like, the last third, you're like, oh, well, is it still going? What are we doing? And then it just goes batshit hoo-ha. Oh, I said a bad word. I didn't mean to say that word.
I think the broadcasting authorities are surrounding the building
I've panicked, but it was so crazy.
Yes.
It was so crazy. It goes full body horror. The metaphors are hit you with a sledgehammer. The beauty industry living in a patriarchy of capitalism will turn us all into monsters.
You heard it here first.
It is wonderful. Yeah. I just watch it, but it is a very red screen.
Oh dear.
Of blood and gore and monsters.
Well, that's three rates.
I know, what's going on?
After some of the horrors that we've endured in recent weeks. So it's back to Michael Nyman, and this is going to be a piece from the piano. The heart asked pleasure first.
Oh, yes.
And this, in the film, Holly Hunter plays the piano in all the pieces in the film. But this is actually the score that was recorded after the film was made, and it's actually Michael Nyman playing the piano, not Holly. And if you want, when we come back, I'll tell you about the time I was standing next to Michael Nyman in a urinal, if you want. Anyway.
Oh, another one.
Listening to the film show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and on digital, and that was Michael Nyman's The title of it has escaped me now, and my screen's gone
dead. What was the instrument? The piano.
The piano.
The piano.
The piano. And anyway, I was in the gentleman's toilet at the Delaware Pavilion waiting to see the Michael Nyman band come on and accompany a man with a movie camera.
And your sister was quite cross about this.
Well, she was,
she?
Because he'd been in the bar before, and she said, he should be backstage, which he should. You know, and he comes
we
in.
We don't mind this
afterwards.
After,
but, you know, you ain't... You know, and he comes in, stands next to me, has a waz, and I'm thinking, haven't you got a dressing room?
Yeah, it's probably needs it to get changed.
Yeah.
In.
Anyway, next week.
Next week. Oh, it's Megalopolis. Yeah. Megalopolis week.
Where well, do we, for this... something that wasn't even going to get distributed a few weeks ago.
It's out next Friday. The Outrun, which is the new Saoirse Ronan film, is out next Friday.
She's everywhere.
She is. She's fabulous, though. I love her. And Never Let Go.
Hailey Berry and her two children are tied to a house, literally.
It looks like a horror.
Sort of, yeah. I don't think there's much in the way of social realism going on in this one.
You know, next weekend is Bradford Widescreen Film Festival.
No,
it
is.
It is, yeah. There's the usual slattering of some Hitchcock films in there.
And are they showing How the West Was Won?
Yep.
Because I think they're one of the few places in the world that can show films in Cinerama, which is the three screen.
That's easy for you to say.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
So it's the widest screen you can have. It's all curves on a curved screen.
That might be worth a trip for a day.
Yeah.
Interstellar 10th anniversary is on at the
really?
Night. I don't think I've actually seen
it. You'd have to pay me
one.
To go back and
well,
see it again.
You maybe want to go and see The Joker instead. There's a few screenings of that ready for the big release in a couple of weeks.
Is that the one with... Oh, no, it's Joker 2 that's got Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga is coming in a few weeks. Coming. But in the meantime, you can see Joaquin... In the Joker. There's also a chance to see Shaun of the Dead again, which I'll always go and see that. That's at the light as well.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff going on.
Yeah. Lots out there. Obviously, as I say, you can probably pick up Seeing Threads on any street corner in Sheffield.
I think it's definitely on telly next month, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Save your money.
Oh, there is a radio series, a documentary series on Radio 4 coming.
Yes, about it, yeah.
This week, I think.
I
think it's broadcast tonight, so it'll be on BBC Sounds.
I did a programme for Radio Sheffield, well, it must have been 7 or 8 years ago now, which was about the making of Threads. And they were talking to Mick Jackson on that. So
yeah, I think they'll be talking to a lot of people that were involved in the making of.
Right then, are we going to say goodbye?
Oh yeah, let's say goodbye.
Goodbye.
And enjoy your
films, as we have this week. And we're going to go out with a piece of music from everybody's favourite cannibal western, Ravenous. And this is a joint collaboration from Michael Nyman and Damon Albarn. And this is Manifest Destiny.